It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 674 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Are you ready for 2025? Well, it's here, and to celebrate, I'm talking with a favorite guest here at the podcast, Jay Magnum from Pet Piranha Entertainment, to ring in the new year. Jay catches us up on everything that happened with his team in 2024, then looks forward to what they have coming our way in 2025. We discuss what's going on with the Astro franchise, Galaxy Gal, and discuss some other areas they will be exploring in the coming year. We also talk about some developments on Kickstarter and the comics industry as a whole, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy this fun and engaging conversation as we start another year here at the podcast. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Jay has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
What would happen if Earth was attacked by aliens called Astrals, but there were no superheroes to stop them? Well, that's what Astral is all about. But now it's time for vengeance. Astral Vengeance.
Jay Magnum makes comics. He's the creator of several awesome indie science fiction and fantasy comic book and graphic novel titles. In 2011, he founded Pet Piranha Entertainment, an independent company specializing in the creation and development of original concepts and properties for graphic novels, comic books, and other comics-related media. He's backed over 300 comics projects on Kickstarter and champions independently produced comics and graphic novels and said, you should too. How's it going, Jay?
Hey, going great, Wayne. Thanks for having me on the show. It's terrific to be here. Happy New Year to you. I hope you're having a good New Year.
We're off to the races, what we're doing so
yes.
far. And I thought before we jumped into 2025, we might look back a little bit on 2024. Why don't you take a look back at like where your projects and stuff, how all that went during 2024 for you?
Yeah, sure. No problem. Well, so 2024 was, again, a banner year for Pet Piranha Entertainment. We doubled our output in 2024.
Wow.
I launched two books and two Kickstarter campaigns associated with those books, which is double my normal one Kickstarter and one book per year.
Wow.
So that's doing pretty good. You know, we went up 100%.
That's great.
It made me busy, though. So we had the one launch Galaxy Gal in the spring. Mm-hmm. I think it was around April or May, somewhere in there, on Kickstarter. And then the usual September-October Astro book release. So that was the two. And believe me, it kept me quite busy.
I bet. Right. Now, I've got a question, because I was just looking at the Astro Vengeance issues 1-4 Kickstarter, and I noticed something that I'm seeing on other Kickstarters as well. It said, this project successfully funded on November 4, but you can still late pledge for available rewards.
Yes.
What's that all
right.
about? Because always before it was like when you would say issues 1-4, you could always add the previous issues on there, and then you'd have to once this project was over, you'd have to wait for the next Kickstarter to do it. But apparently, that's no longer true. What's the story with that?
Well, I'm not an expert.
Okay.
but I can tell you about it. So I'll tell you a little bit about it. That's a new feature that Kickstarter. Debuted, I guess, in 2024, or maybe a little earlier in the year, maybe it's mid-year. And you're right. You can set up your campaign. You can opt into what they call, this feature is called late pledges. That's what it's called. That's what they call it. They call it late pledges. And you can opt into it. So when you build your campaign and you're doing your rewards, you can specify, will this, so you have to, I think it's on the main configuration page of your Kickstarter campaign. When you're building it, you have to specify whether this campaign will support late pledges. And then when you build the reward levels, you have to specify for each reward level. So it's by reward level as well. You can specify if that reward will be available for late pledges after the end of the campaign. So you could, you know, not all of them have to be. You can make some that are and some that aren't. Like if some are time sensitive and you'll only be able to support those during the duration of the campaign, then obviously you can configure those so that late pledging is shut off, while other things that, you know, maybe you can continue to offer after the campaign is closed, you can turn late pledges on for those reward levels. And indeed, sure enough, someone can come to the closed campaign and it's not 100% closed. You can still pledge. There are some caveats to it I should explain. I believe Kickstarter doesn't allow the price of the reward to be the same for during the campaign and the late pledging. I believe the late pledging has to be more, even if it's just by a dollar. I think they recommend like 10% more. And I guess to your point, you know, it kind of opens up a can of worms, mm-hmm. right? So why are they doing this? Well, some of the other platforms like Indiegogo would let you have what they would call a flexible funding mm-hmm. goal, which means that you could accept pledges after the technical end of the campaign, after the, you know, the last day of the campaign. And Indiegogo allowed that for a while. And I think Kickstarter wanted some of that business. They wanted some people that were on Indiegogo for that reason. I want to give them a reason to come over to Kickstarter, because prior to that, if you came over to Kickstarter from Indiegogo, you could not do right, that. So right. I think it let some people. So, to your point, you kind of say, well, then what is the whole point of running a campaign for a duration of time? If, you know, you can allow late pledges after the campaign, then who cares? Well, the end date is irrelevant, right? It doesn't make any sense anymore, right? So getting back to that price point, I think that's why the late pledge for the same reward has to cost more, and they recommend 10% more, but you can put whatever. You can make it 20% more, 50% more, 100% more, a dollar more, whatever. But I think that's the whole point, is they want to have some way, I guess, of dinging, you know, technically, quote, I'm doing air quotes here, dinging backers that, you know, sure, you can get it after the end of the campaign, but it's going to cost you more. It's going to hit you more in the pocketbook to get the same thing. So that gives them the incentive to pledge during the actual start and end dates, you know, the duration of the campaign. Because otherwise, you're right. What would the point be? If everything costs the same, it doesn't matter. The end dates no longer matter. It's just an open-ended thing like it was on Indiegogo. Mm-hmm. And you can pledge a month later, 2 months later, 6 months later. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So it's that cost increase incentivizes people. You can get the same thing cheaper if you do it between the begin and end dates, campaign duration. And that's mainly, I think, how the whole thing works. So, yeah, I tried it out. I enabled it for the latest Astral, which was October, November last year. So that's still open. And they do give you controls on that, Wayne. You can set it to the late pledging to end automatically on a certain mm-hmm. date. So you can schedule like an end date for it to stop and be fully closed so that no one can pledge. Because, you know, if you think about it, if you have multiple campaigns like I and a bunch of other creators mm-hmm. do, you don't want to have multiple campaigns that are still open, because it gets confusing, right? The fulfillment and right. stuff like that. So you can schedule those late pledges to end at a certain date, or the other option is to manually do it. So if you're not really sure when you want to actually cut it off and not allow any more late pledges, you can set it to, you know, manually, and then you have to remember, okay, if I don't want to take any more pledges past a certain date or a certain event, I have to log back into Kickstarter and manually turn those off. And you can do that. You can do it that way
too. See, the thing there have been times when I've been short on cash and I haven't been able to participate in the Kickstarter that I really wanted to. But there's no way to do it. And, you know, what you have to do is wait for the next Kickstarter campaign to come along. So then, right. then you have to, you hope that it's in the, you know, the add-ons and stuff like that later on. But there's been so many times I've missed. It was a one-time project, went past me, and I haven't been able to catch up to it. So I was kind of happy to see that, but I can understand how confusing it can be, though. So the goal in the last one was $4,000. And as I look at Kickstarter right now, you are over $6,000. Is what's come in. Does that include late pledges?
Yes. Okay. So when you're looking at it on the display there, mm-hmm. The display to the public does not differentiate between which, you know, how much of that amount came in during the initial duration of the campaign before the technical end date. And the same thing with the backer count. I think it's on 129?
Yeah.
I think it's 129 now. That also does not differentiate between how many of those backers backed the project within the formal begin and end dates and which ones were late pledges. But I can tell you, you know, they were. So I had several backers that did late pledges for whatever reason, money, or they somehow didn't know about it, or they're on vacation or something. You know, people go out of the country that, you know, they're not connected in. So, yeah. Not a lot of them. I think we finished with, I think we finished with a little over 6,000, I want to say. And I think we finished with 123, four backers. So it's been several, you know.
Well, hey,
some
there's more money to be made that way. And I think that's a great change. When I saw it, I said, boy, I'm going to go back to all those Kickstarters I missed and see if I can catch up on some of those things. Because there's some wonderful stuff that I, you know, money was short and I just couldn't do it. And then I hate the, you know, I hate the pledge and then not be able to fulfill it, you know. So I always try to be really prudent on those things. But I think that's a great thing. Now, does that mean you're going to end the late pledge for one before you start another Kickstarter? Is that how that's going to work?
Well, I mean, you can do it. So to the people out there that run Kickstarters, you can really do it any way you want to do it. I mean, you can leave all your campaigns, late pledges turned on, you know, indefinitely if you wanted to, if you can handle that, if you can manage it. What I would probably do is they must have enabled that after Galaxy Gal in the spring, because I didn't have that option for Galaxy Gal last spring. So it must have happened like over the summer or something, because then it was available when I was building the latest Astral. But what I would probably do, what I probably will do, is I will probably keep those late pledges options open, most of them on Astral, until like maybe 30 days or something before I'm ready to launch another Astral campaign, and do it by series like that, you know, so that maybe the latest – so if we did another Galaxy Gal, I would probably leave the latest Galaxy Gal open on late pledges at the same time I've got an Astral one open, because that's not confusing to me. I can manage it by series, but what I wouldn't want to have is I wouldn't want to have two Astral campaigns open at the same time I have two Galaxy Gal, because that does get confusing. So I would, within the series, I would close one off before I launch another one, and then I'd let that one finish and be open to late pledges, and then I would close that off maybe a month or so, whatever, prior to the launch of the next one. And the reason for that is just because promotion and stuff, you know, if you're promoting an upcoming campaign, probably not the best idea to have one currently open that you can pledge, because what's the point, right? You want to kind of build up. And plus, you know, I want to work and focus and concentrate on the one I'm building. I don't want to have to worry about fulfilling orders on one that's already open. So I would probably think about like 30 days prior to the launch, to the scheduled launch of the next one in one series, I would probably cut off the, you know, end the late pledges, and then for the next 30 days promote, focus on the upcoming campaign, and then within 30 days, not, you know, you can wait 30 days, that's not a big, that's like a credit cycle, right? I mean, so, and then open it up, and then, you know, it's open for pledges. And I should say, Wayne, you know, the late pledges, you know, Kickstarter forces the late pledge of the same reward to be more when it's the late pledge, more money than when it's during the campaign, obviously for incentive, but that's Kickstarter's thing. I mean, I'm not here to gouge anybody. I don't think any of the other creators are out there to gouge anybody. So, I mean, to the people out there listening, that, you know, your listeners that are backers of campaigns, we're forced into it. I mean, Kickstarter doesn't let you, at least at the time we're talking right now, it doesn't let the price of the reward be the same between during the campaign and late pledges. They force it to be higher. So what I try to do is I try to make it as low as possible, maybe a buck or two, something like that, because I'm not here to gouge people. And I don't think other campaign creators are out there to gouge people. So that's not something that we really have a lot of control over. So I try not to gouge people on that. But because of Kickstarter's rules, it does end up costing a little bit more for the late pledges. So that's why I say I would cut that off 30 days before I'd launch a new campaign. And then during the new campaign, that's your best, you know, according to Kickstarter, again, their rules, not mine, during the duration of the campaign, that's your best price on everything, because the late pledges are more. And if you, you know, if you're a campaign creator and you're offering early bird specials, like for the first 48, 72 hours, whatever it is, that's even cheaper, right? Mm-hmm. So you can offer those discounts and you can promote it to people. You can say, you know, you get the best deal if you do it between the beginning and end and take advantage of the early birds. Mm-hmm. But I want to make that clear that we creators out here are not out to gouge people. So if you see that rewards cost more when they're late pledges, again, that's not really us. That's that's Kickstarter rules. That's not my rules.
On the other hand, if you really want the book and it's hard to get it any other way but through Kickstarter, then that's a real help to people who really want the book. So
it's Kickstarter's world we're just living in. Yeah. That's kind of
Of course, one of the reasons I'm asking about that is because I'm going to be helping with the Kickstarter this year.
Oh, cool.
We're going to do a Stab the Ever After. It's going to have in fact, on the 14th, we're starting up. So I'm curious. Richard's running the whole business.
Richard Rivera.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the sidelines. Yeah. I'm helping and stuff. But when I saw that, I went, wait a second. I haven't seen that before. What's that about? I better find out about that. But 2024 for you was a great year, and so I'm glad to hear that because I think what's happening in the industry is I think indie publishers like yourself are where the future is. It just seems like more and more and more of the books and stuff that I see that are really successful. I don't know if you're familiar with the Ripaverse at all. They are another indie publisher who is doing grand stuff. I mean, they are selling books like. They're selling hundreds of thousands of copies of issues. They just came out with their first ongoing series. They're called Horsemen. And that's going to be I'm going like, how often is that going to come out? What's going on? It's going to come out like, they say it's only going to come out like two or three times a year. But it's going to make it hard for me to keep track of, though, because then I don't know when's it going to come out. I gotta know these things. So there's all these kinds of things. There's all these changes happening. One of the things that happened this year that really intrigued me are the ultimate / absolute lines that Marvel and DC are doing. It's kind of turned into the most exciting stuff that DC and Marvel are doing are not in their regular books. It's in their absolute or ultimate lines. That's where a lot, because basically they're kicking it off again. And so there's not a lot of continuity to keep track of. And it just seems to be done. Of course, they can make changes like Batman now is a big hulking guy. He's no longer he's not rich. He's an engineer instead of being a millionaire and stuff. So he's a different character in there. And it just seems to catch people's attention a lot more. So I just find it fascinating that rather than take the regular comics and change those all around, they're doing a second line that has a different version of the character out there. And it seems to be going over great guns, which is funny to me. Oh, you know,
it's like Superman 2099, Wonder Woman 2099.
Exactly. There's an absolute, but it's funny. Absolute Superman, the one constant universe in the universe is that corporate greed that even exists on Krypton, which I found interesting. Oh. So they're doing all those kinds of things. So there's an absolute Wonder Woman instead of there's no such thing as Amazons anymore. She was born and raised in hell this time, which is a very different character. Oh. So she's a different person now. But all those things are very different takes, and it seems to be resonating with people. People are kind of jumping back on to see these different lines with different takes on the characters.
Well, maybe it's people are just tired of the same old thing all the time. I mean, what have we had? We've had countless – it's more on the DC side, but I mean somewhat on the Marvel side too. Countless Spider-Man, Superman series. I mean, how many times can you tell the same? And I mean, I get it. You know, the directors and the stars, they all have their own take on it. But I mean, how many times can you tell the same? So I think I think maybe that's good. You know, give people something a little different. And I think they're eating it up.
DC was forever rebooting and restarting and stuff like that. In fact, they're right now in the middle when they're doing this absolute line, they're part of another initiative called All In. And they're basically trying to change the creative teams on all the regular books to give different kinds of stuff going on there as well. So it's DC's trying their best. Of course, Marvel's on top of the heap. They don't really have to worry so much about those things. So it's a very interesting thing. And of course, the indie books are all going like, now what? What are we supposed to do? And everybody is struggling. The one thing I've noticed is I think digital comics are slowing down. as far as people buying digital versions. Have you found that true on your Kickstarters and stuff? Do you still sell as many digital versions of books as you do the paper versions?
Actually, for me, to be quite honest with you, Wayne, it's just the opposite.
Really?
The last campaign for Astral, I think we sold more digitals than, you know, percentage-wise than any other campaign prior to that. And I think that may be due to just, you know, cost. Mm-hmm. I mean, shipping, the cost of shipping is so much. You have to charge so much more for the printed books, and I mean the graphics, the images have gotten so good. You know, the DPI is so sharp on the digitals. I mean, I know some people were telling me, "Oh, yeah, get digital comics." And, you know, I got the 80-inch TV, and they put them up on their 80-inch TV, and it's still sharp. The images are still sharp.
Wow.
So I mean, that's one way to do it. I mean, that's not how I would do it. That's not the way I like to read comics, but I can see why that would appeal to people. Plus, like I said, the aforementioned cost. I mean, most people are charging something like half or less than half for their basic digital copy than they are for their basic print copy, right? So that kind of from a financial perspective makes sense. I mean, we've been in the economic doldrums for at least the last 2 to 3 years minimum, hoping that's going to pick up now. But I mean, that's where we've been. So it makes sense to me. Right? It makes sense.
Interesting, because I'm still a paper guy. I tend to buy paper unless I miss an issue. The book comes out and I didn't order it and I can't find it anywhere. I'll buy the digital so I can read. Then I can keep going from then on and buy the paper versions after, because I know what's going on with it.
Yeah. And I mean, the other advantages are, you know, digital, they don't take up any physical room. So if you're challenged for room, and then the other thing too is international shipping is freaking insane now. I mean, it's not going to get any better, right? It used to be like just crazy, and now it's just freaking insane, and I can see why. So more and more international buyers are opting for the digital just because of cost. I mean, I have to add, I mean, gosh, even going, you know, North America, Canada, Mexico, you're talking 20-25 easy, if not more. And if you're talking like New Zealand, Australia, that's like almost $40, right for a basic parcel.
I guess sometimes when I've sent stuff to Canada, it costs more to mail it than it did to make it and package it and everything like that. The
postage. Oh, right. Exactly. Yeah. The contents are worth less than the postage. And I mean, there are people somewhere in the future, in the year 2099, listening to this podcast and laughing at the prices we're talking about because it cost $2,000 to mail something to New Zealand in 2099. But I mean, it's all relative, right? So,
right.
To us, that's expensive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see what happens.
It's either order a package internationally and pay the international shipping, or fill up my car with gas, or make a trip to the to Burger King or, you know, McDonald's.
Pretty true.
Right. That's where we're at.
Yeah.
So I could totally
very understand. True. Very true. Okay. 2024 we covered. Let's look forward to 2025. Now, when I call up J Magnum on Kickstarter, there are three projects I see coming from you. Do you want to talk about what they are and what's going on?
Yeah. And I mean, some of that, you know, would be this year. Some of it would probably be, you know, scoot out even more, maybe even to 2026. So once again, we're going to try the impossible feat at Pet Piranha. I'm not sure we're going to make it, but we're going to give it the old college try. So going to try to double our output again this year. So last year we doubled output from one project to two. And so this year we're going to try to double it from two to four. Woohoo! Four projects. So the first project launching relatively soon. So if anyone's listening to this in January of 2025, we're looking to launch maybe like mid-January, maybe toward the end of January. And this one's to take advantage of the Make 100. I don't know if you remember the Make 100 promotion that Kickstarter does every year, every January. Mm-hmm. So it's like January. I think the campaigns will float into February with that. So that one is going to be a special red label edition of Astral Vengeance 4. So let me explain about that. So it kind of goes back to the art. So the artists that are doing the art for some of these books, you know, you're writing the script, you know, you write this, you write that, and they're interpreting that, right? Well, so sometimes, so going back to the Astral line, I can understand a little bit about that. So I try to keep my stuff like PG, PG-13 kind of rating, you know, in there, teen plus, tween plus kind of thing. Sometimes the art will fit that perfectly. Sometimes the art is a little more extreme, and so I have to edit that a little bit to make it fit more with the target audience and the rating we're trying to achieve on the comics. So for Vengeance, the whole storyline, it's been kind of a darker, bloodier kind of story. If anyone's read that, they'll know what I'm talking about. And so the art for Astral Vengeance 4, the raw art that I got back, would require some editing. I would have to make some edits to it, and we'll be doing that, obviously, for the books for the campaign that we ran last fall. That's sort of like the green label kind of stuff, right? But, you know, I do try to connect with my audience at least once a year. We do surveys, like SurveyMonkey, whatever. I get some feedback, and one of the things that people were telling me, that the respondents to the survey, you know, the fans of Pet Piranha and Astral, was that they were looking for, you know, they were interested in more mature kind of stuff, more like rated R kind of stuff, going to that level. And, you know, there's a lot of horror books doing well on Kickstarter. There's a lot of NSFW books on Kickstarter doing pretty well. So clearly there's a demand for that, and that's what the fans had indicated in the survey. So I figured, well, let's give it a shot. So what we're going to do with Astral Vengeance 4 is I'm going to take the original art, which is unedited. So this would be like an unedited issue, rated R level kind of issue, and then produce a special Make 100 copy for that campaign in January and going into February. So I'm not sure when I'm going to launch that, but it's going to be a Make 100. So it's only going to be 100 copies printed. Don't think we're going to do digital on that one. We're going to keep it to paper because that's generally what you want to do with the Make 100. I want to keep it rather exclusive. They're going to be foil covers only, you know, so premium paper and all that good stuff. So giving it a shot. It's brand new. It's a special thing, so I want to do it right. So that's what that book is going to be. So it's going to be unedited, raw art. So just, you know, the warnings out there to anyone. I mean, it's obviously would be on the campaign page too, but the book would then contain some nudity, and it would also contain some more over-the-top violence, a little more graphic violence than we've done in prior Astro books. So, and again, it's more of an alternative version. So there is that green label version that, you know, we kickstarted in the fall, and everyone will get that. But this is kind of for those people that are fans of that more pushing the limits of the ratings and more of the rated R level stuff. It's a chance to pick up a version of that book that kind of fits more with that kind of level. See,
it's funny that's going on with you, because with Stabbity Bunny, we ran into something not exactly the same. The original Stabbity Bunny story is much more of a family drama. And, of course, with a name like Stabbity, people were expecting a lot more stabbing to go on. And so what Richard went back and did was he created his own spinoff. He called it Stabbity Ever After, in which the plush bunny ends up in an alternate universe where he can actually move and do stuff, but he doesn't speak. And it was a whole separate thing. And my gosh, the people who wanted that ate that up. They were buying those. We were up in New York when it first came out, and these people were coming up and grabbing them by the bunches. We were right next – the artist was right next to us. And at the end of the convention, he said, "I've been doing nothing but signing that book all weekend," he goes. And, man, people just – even we had reader copies that were out there, and they were beat to a pulp because people were reading them all weekend. People still wanted to buy those. And we were like, "You're kidding. These people have been reading these all weekend long. You want to buy that too? Oh, yeah, I'll take it." And we were like, okay, so Richard's been kind of – that's what the Kickstarter is going to be about, Stabbity Ever After. They're going to rework a couple of the original stuff and go on to that. But see, that's what you're doing. You're being receptive to what your fans are telling you. And I think that's always a wise thing, because we certainly have learned that, man, there's all this interesting stuff that the fans will tell you what you want to know if you ask them. So it's a good thing to do.
Exactly. And that's – So to that point, the other projects, real quick, that we have coming up, and these are, so the red label Astral. I don't have a preview page, pre-launch page up on that one mm-hmm. just yet. That one's coming soon. But the other ones that you're seeing out there, so like the next one after that would be probably sometime in the spring. Going to plan on launching that one called The Blazes. Mm-hmm. That's something a little different. That's more supernatural. So mm-hmm. it's, Las Vegas in the 1980s, and it's about a casino nightclub called The Blazes, mm-hmm. Which is essentially run by Lucifer. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we have demonesses that are strippers, and so it's really fun. And so the protagonist is an Elvis impersonator. Oh, wait, we're not supposed to say Elvis impersonator. The term is tribute artist. Oh, okay. Right? So he's the protagonist. Okay. And so he has a little adventure out there in the 1980s Las Vegas underworld. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be really fun. That's another one that's going to be pushing the boundaries a little mm-hmm. bit more. So rated R kind of mm-hmm. stuff, violence, nudity, that kind of thing, just to be specific.
Not for the kids.
No, this is all 18-plus kind of stuff, the adult mature kind of thing. But it's interesting you should mention that with Stabity Bunny because, trying to keep these things to comic book size, it's like, well, you should do more, getting the feedback as I'm building this thing and showing it to the inner circle. Mm-hmm. You should do more with, the demoness strippers. That's a great idea, mm-hmm. And so trying to do something with that within the book, and it's taking away from the core mm-hmm. story, and there's just not enough pages for it all. So that ended up being spun off, and that's the third project, which is out there on Kickstarter mm-hmm. right now. That's Peaches and Cinnamon. So Peaches and Cinnamon are two of the demoness nightclub strippers that I think this book is about their summer adventures in the 80s. This is more of a pinup book,
Okay.
So kind of fun. So the girls go out, on these crazy, wacky adventures, and they're idiots. So there's a lot of humor in the book. It's a funny mm-hmm. book. But the nice big pinups, beautiful artwork. Working with the team, same team that's doing The Blazes.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So that's coming up. That'll be over the summer. And then as we go into the fall, we will, of course, have the regularly scheduled Astral. That's the going back to the Green Label Astral stuff. And that is the Final Vengeance. It's going to be Final Vengeance. So the final issue in that series, that is the fourth and final. And I don't think I have a – because we've still got the late pledges open, and because that one's toward the end of the year, I don't have a pre-launch page up for the Final Vengeance issue yet, but that will be coming. I'll probably leave the late pledges open probably through the mm-hmm. summer. And then as we get into the early fall, we'll look at when we're going to launch that Final Vengeance mm-hmm. issue, and then cut off and then we'll launch the final. Yeah, so that's all four projects I've got set for.
Well, I got to ask about one other thing I see up in Kickstarter, Galaxy Gal Annihilation.
Right. So that's the other one that's out there. That is going to be more of a 2026 thing.
Oh, really?
So then why have these things? So people ask, well, if it's not coming out for a while, then why do you have, why is the pre-launch page out there so soon? And the answer is, I think, simple. You want people to know about it. Mm-hmm. And, so we all have I'm sure you do too. You have your mailing lists, mm-hmm. People that you contact and try mm-hmm. to tell. And not everybody even opens up every email. So, if you're sending once a month, you might get somebody opening it. There are some people that open all of them, but some people are more recreational email, so they're opening up every third or fourth email you send. And so if you're doing it once a month, you're really only connecting with those people every 3 to 4 months. And so there needs to be time, mm-hmm. right? Because if you're promoting a link to a pre-launch page and, someone's not going to open up an email for 3 or 4 months, it stands to reason that if you open up that pre-launch page within 3 months of launching, that person may not even know about it by the time it's launching, mm-hmm. right? So I've developed this thing where I open them up as soon as I can if the project is well enough along and we've got the contract signed and we know it's going to happen mm-hmm. and the thing's green lit, kind of like a film, right? So I put the pre-launch page out there, and what it's doing is it's collecting followers, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. you go to those pages and you see how many followers mm-hmm. there are, and you just want there to be enough time to collect enough people that people are aware of it, so that when you do hit that launch button, that all of those people that are following will get the little nag emails that go out from Kickstarter. Hey, J Magnum just launched blah, blah, blah project, you know, and they'll send that stuff out. So that's what that's all about. So, yeah, I mean, no, we had a really fun time on Galaxy Gal last spring, 2024. That was Bill Walco, and that book was a blast. In fact, I just sent out the last copies that fulfillment is done on that one. I got to close that project off. Again, that was too early for the late pledges. So unfortunately that one doesn't have any, but the next one we do, which again, probably, it's January now, but next year. So maybe spring 2026, whenever it launches, we'll leave, obviously after that campaign's done, we'll leave late pledges on for it. But in the meantime, what I've done is I've added Galaxy Gal issues to these other campaigns as add-ons, so people can still get them. It's a little more roundabout way. I'll let people know they can add them on. But yeah, no, Galaxy Gal was a lot of fun. Bill was great. I mean, if you've ever seen the art, I mean, you got your copy.
I did. I enjoyed it.
That you've seen the art. I mean, the art is just fantastic. He did a fantastic job on that. The print company did a fantastic job with the covers. You know, if there's one project that I thought we really, you know, hit all the cylinders and Bill knocked it out of the park, I would say it's Galaxy Gal. That was awesome. And I can't wait to do another one. It's just like Hollywood, though, Wayne. It's like, you know, your schedules have to align and Bill's taken on some other projects right now. And of course I'm in the middle of all these, which we talked about for 2025, and our schedules have to kind of realign, you know, and we had to get fulfillment done, which just ended on the first one. So I think I'm looking at the schedules. I don't know that our schedules are going to even align on another Galaxy Gal book until maybe end of this year, early next year, 2026. And so then you want to plan the Kickstarter, you know, you can't do it. You got to have a certain amount done. So it just makes sense that probably the earliest you would see the Kickstarter for Galaxy Gal Annihilation, which is the second issue, would be 2026, maybe in the spring, maybe in the summer. But you know, the outline's done. I'm working on the script. The script obviously has to be done before we can proceed. So you notice it's got a little write-up there. We have a name for it. So some work has been done. And I think at this point, we're just waiting for my schedule and Bill's schedule to
align,
to dovetail in and align.
I
can't wait. It's fantastic. I can't wait to do that book. That was a lot of fun.
I enjoyed reading it. I thought it was a great book. Lots of interesting little allusions to other comics and things like that, which I really enjoy.
Oh, sure. I love it. We had fun putting in all that stuff. It was fun.
I do have to congratulate you guys on your being able to do a variety of books, because you know there are certain writers, all they can write, let's say, like our Western stories. What happens if Western stories kind of fall out of favor? See, your thing, you're able to do a variety of stuff. Astro has its own ability to do cover a certain amount. Galaxy Gal covers another spectrum, and they're going to overlap, of course. And now with going into these other books, I think that's going to be a nice way to maybe everything will support each other and everything will work out real well, and you know, hopefully draw some people in that'll say, wait a second, I didn't try this other book out. Let me give it a look and see what's going on with that. So I think being able to do this nice of a variety as you're doing, I think is a great move for you guys in Pet Piranha.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to get a chance to expand and do some different things. And, you know, it's funny you should mention that, because these other projects, you know, like the Blazes, for example, has been something like I'm sure happens with other creators. It's long gestating. I mean, that thing was on the shelf. I'm trying to remember how long the Blazes has been on the shelf, maybe 10 years. You have these ideas, but you got to go with this other stuff first. That, I mean, you got to make sure the market's there and are people really ready for these more mature type books and stuff. And then, you know, I'm so busy trying to get Astral off the ground and Pet Piranha off the ground. You know, there's just no time, and all your resources are being thrown into what you're doing. So I mean, it takes money, right, to develop it. So there's no money for it. But it's nice that we can kind of sit back, and Astral is well on its way. Galaxy Gal is spun off of Astral, is well on its way. And so now we can, after all these years, I can finally, you know, take a breath and, you know, circle back to some of these things that have been long gestating on the show. And I think that's not a bad thing. No. I think things that have been in development for a long time gives you a lot of years to refine it. And I've certainly done that over the years, refining it. And one of those refinements, you know, was, hey, let's pull out, you know, peaches and cinnamon from the Blazes, mm-hmm. and, you know, let's do something different with mm-hmm. that. So, I mean, the Blazes is its own thing. Galaxy Gal is its own mm-hmm. thing. Astral is its own mm-hmm. thing. Peaches and Cinnamon is its own thing. And then I've got other stuff on the drawing board. I mean, if you've seen my comic books, mm-hmm. you know, the back cover, the inside back cover, you know, have little ads for stuff that we want to develop and get launched. So there's a series that happens in the Astroverse in the future. Mm-hmm. 2525 is, that's another series I'm looking to get moving. Mm-hmm. That's been gestating for a while. Mm-hmm. The Lost Axe Files is another one. You probably saw mm-hmm. that. I think that ad was on the back of mm-hmm. Galaxy Gal. Mm-hmm. So, and that sort of spins off the secret agent, you know, the black ops mm-hmm. from Astral, so it's happening in the Astralverse. Mm-hmm. So all these neat things, you know, that you want to do. And, you know, if it's really, it's just time and money, right? That's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. So if the Blazes makes money, the Red Label Astral makes money, Peaches and Cinnamon makes money, then that's, you know, profits that you can turn around and get some of these other books right. developed and out. So I can't wait. Mm-hmm. It's like you said, the spectrum, you know, you want to broaden the spectrum mm-hmm. and, you know, I don't want to say – you don't want to try to appeal to everybody because you can't be all things to all mm-hmm. people. But I mean, but the more you can diversify into different areas like supernatural, science fiction, you know, futuristic type stuff, you know, sort of going into the secret agent type mm-hmm. of world, mm-hmm. but the more genres you can get into, yeah, the more fans hopefully you'll collect. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it's all about. But my thing is with each of those – you have to be able to do it well, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, I'm never going to put out a project that I don't think I'm doing well mm-hmm. and that's not mm-hmm. been through the grinder and, you know, all of the stuff, all of the things that we could do to develop it to be the best it can be, you know, have been done, mm-hmm. right? So it's never going to be an inferior product, I think, like some of the big corporations, you know, the Marvels, the DCs out there that have to push a book out, you know, and it's rushed or whatever, and there's not enough thought. You're never going to get that from me, and you're never going to get that mm-hmm. from the indies, I think. So that's our major advantages. We only put it – you said it yourself. Our stuff doesn't come out with as much frequency maybe, but when the stuff does come out, it's high-quality mm-hmm. stuff. And I don't just mean the art. I mean the writing – the production, the quality of the paper, the covers.
All right. Well, I got to tell you two quick stories. When sure. Richard and I, we met an artist, and I won't mention his name to protect the innocent. And he, we went to dinner one night, and he spent the entire dinner trying to convince Richard that Stabbity Bunny should be a more sexy book, that the girl who was 8 should be 18, and all this stuff. And he actually had drawings of what the different things could look like in a more adult, shall we say, book. And we literally looked at it and went, no, don't think that's what we want in this book, you know. Now, she's going to eventually get to be 18, Grace is, but she's not going to go that route. But gotcha. Though, it's so interesting to me, though. But there was a guy, and I don't know if he was at the same convention that you were at up in Longwood. There was a guy who did a book, and I forget his name even, called White Widow. And White Widow, which is interesting because Marvel now has their own White Widow. The You're White right. Widow yeah. books were selling to adult males. He'd have a long line people buying because – White Widow, shall we say, was she had two outstanding attributes. and so the thing that got me was that there's all these guys buying this book, and of course they wouldn't even look at us, and there they are right next to us, standing buying all the White Widows and get every cover they could find and all this stuff. And I'm going, man, there is a market for this. It is out there. And so I applaud you for being able to go in there, maybe do it well. And maybe, you know, someone might actually realize that, hey, there's good stories in some of these books as well. So maybe try the other books and see how it's going. I'm just always fascinated by that because that doesn't appeal to me so much. But it's as my – I used to have a lady who worked with me. She says, it's not for you. It's not made for you. And I said, well, okay, because, you know, the thing of it is if it helps you make more books and it makes you more successful, I'm all for it. Well, let's do it.
That's true. And, you know, a lot of these projects, you know, that you think they're one thing, you know, and then you get into them. And then they have a way of kind of coming to life and becoming their own mm-hmm. thing. You know, they become a thing of their own and they kind of spiral a little bit out of mm-hmm. control. Cause like, you know, it's like I was talking about, you know, the Blazes. Well, Peaches and Cinnamon are characters in the Blazes, but you know, they're sort of side characters. They don't have a lot of time in there, and they don't have a lot of dialogue. But they sort of took on a life of their own, so they got spun off into their own book because we just didn't have room to deal with everything, and all these ideas are just going crazy. And the characters, you spend so much time with them, you're writing them, you're trying to understand their motivations if you're doing it right, you know, and so they become in your head at least, and with your friends you're discussing, they become people, right? I mean, they're fictional people, they're imaginary people, but they're people. Absolutely. And so you want to be able to do certain things with those people, and sometimes you just can't do it all, you know, in a single book, which is how we got the spinoff Peaches and Cinnamon. They can do their own thing. But, you know, I'm reminded of what guides me is you and I are old people, so we can relate to this, but something that Charles Schulz said, and I think I keep saying this on your shows, is just, his advice to aspiring artists and creators was always, whatever you're going to do or whatever you're doing, do it with charm. Right? That was his thing. And that's what I endeavor to do. So these things always take on a life of their own because you're trying to put so much effort and charm into it and make these people, they're not just characters that, you know, they are a character. They're, you know, the proverbial characters. So, you know, they take on a personality all their own, and, you know, then you want to see them interacting. And as long as, you know, what's coming out of that is entertaining and something that you would want to see or to watch or to read, then, you know, you're doing it right. So, I mean, that's what's happened with all this stuff. That's what happened with Astral, Galaxy Gal, The Blazes, even though that one's not out yet, you'll see that, you know, this coming year. But we put so much time and effort. I put so much into it. Making these characters three-dimensional, four-dimensional, whatever we can do with them, so that they read and behave like real people, and then do it with charm, right? You want to do it in a satisfying way that people kind of winking at the audience, you know. So that's what I try to bring to it.
Well, it's very well done, I have to say. I always appreciate, you know, the intelligence brought to bear on all these things, and I'm sure that even The Blazes and Peaches and Cinnamon, there's going to be a lot of intelligence brought to bear with the two. People might be surprised how intelligent they are, but I'm sure they're going to be lots of fun to read and stuff like that. I think all this stuff is great that you're doing. Astral, I remember buying the first thing and going like, wow, where's more of this? And I was so glad to find that you were putting them out in trades and stuff, which leads me to ask, when you get the last issue of Vengeance out, are you going to collect that into a trade, or are you going to just go with the individual issues for now?
Well, yeah, for now, I mean, obviously that's going to be individual issues. And so what you have to do is you have to wait for all of that to kind of sell down a little bit first, right? Because if you have a stockpile of comic books and then you print a trade, which one are people going to buy? Are they going to buy a stack of comic books or are they going to buy a trade, right? So it's got to sell down a little bit. And there are people that are still filling the holes in their collections. You know, they need issue three or four or whatever. So, yeah, we'll stick with it. But, you know, I'll tell you something encouraging that's happened is on this latest campaign for Astral, which is the fourth out of the five issues for the Vengeance narrative, the story, I actually sold out of all of my copy A, know, the mass market copy of Vengeance 1.
Wow.
So that's saying something. I'm sold. Now, I still have some of the variant covers. I still got that. So I still have, you know, books that I have the story and you know, I can sell to people. But yeah, cover A, the basic mass market cover, I'm sold.
Good.
So that's kind of interesting because it's the first time I've really ever sold out of something, at least that fast anyway. That was – what's it only been a couple of years on that series? Wow. And the first issue, basic mass market cover. And so they're asking, well, will you print more copies? And probably not. I'll probably just sell the variant covers. You know, still have a bunch of those. So probably just use those instead.
Well,
but yeah, sold out of cover A, which is pretty good for a sci-fi book that's not, you know – over-the-top violence horror book or these other kind of books that you talk about, the NSFW kind of stuff. That's pretty good for a book like that.
Especially first issue.
Like I said, I'm having fun. You're having fun and you want to keep doing it, I'm going to keep doing it. So
I know if I buy a book that you've done, I'm going to have a good read and I'm going to enjoy it. So I highly recommend it. If people have not jumped on the bandwagon yet with this, I would say get started. I was so glad to read Astral Genesis, which was got me involved in the whole universe and stuff. And Galaxy Gal is a lot of fun, totally different setup and stuff. Very different bit of writing, too. which I like. So I'm sure the Blazes and Peaches and Cinnamon is going to be the same kind of thing. It's going to be well written, but it's going to appeal to different people probably on different levels.
Well, that gets back to the characters and rounding them out and making sure that each character is their own individual and that they speak with their own cadence and their own voice and their own personality. Yeah. That's really what's built into that. But I'm glad to hear that you like it. You're a fan. I love hearing fan feedback. Mm-hmm. That's another thing that I really like about being an indie creator is the ability that the big boys don't have of personally connecting with the fans. I mean, I send out the surveys. I love to hear from people that way, but I also like to hear from people at conventions or through email or whatever venue it is, whatever method. I love connecting with our friends and fans of these books. It's been a lot of fun for you. It's very rewarding as a creator.
As a creator, you spend a lot of time on your own doing stuff. And then, of course, when you have to give it out to the public, you know, you're always a little nervous. You know, are they going to like it? I mean, I've been spending all this time and I think it's great, but what are they going to think when they get it? And so it's always great when you get feedback and stuff like that. And I always think, well, I'll tell you one more experience. I was at with Richard. We were at a convention. We were at Heroes. And this guy comes running up to me. He says, oh, I've got to tell you how much I love your book. I said, wait a second. I said, see that guy over there? Richard, he's the creator of the book. I'm just the editor. Tell him what you thought of the book. So he ran over and for the next half hour, arms were waving and telling him what a wonderful book it was. Nice. And I was like, I'll tell one other story real quick. We were in Virginia and we were coming back from New York and we stopped. There's two comic shops across from the street from each other in Virginia. And we went into this one comic shop and there was a girl getting ready. It was a Tuesday. She was getting ready for Wednesday. And we were talking, Richard was talking about, you know, all the books and stuff he was working with and stuff. And he said, well, the book I'm working on right now is Stabity Bunny. And the lady stopped and she dropped all the books. She ran around the table and she flung her arms around him. Oh, I love Stabity Bunny. That's my favorite book. Oh, I can't believe it. And I thought, you know, I was so glad I wish I had my camera with me at that point. I didn't get to take a picture. But the good thing is that kind of stuff. You go back to your drawing board and your writing table and you sit there and you remember those things. That gives you courage to keep going, I think. So I always think that's an important thing. If you like something, tell them for pity's sake. You know?
Yeah, and that's really important because, you know, for us, we're lucky that it doesn't have to be all about the money like it does with the big corporation, the corporatized stuff. You know, for us, it can be about the people. It doesn't always have to be about the money. And, you know, that's one good bit of advice I heard was, you know, the financial aspect. You know, how do you make $1 million in independent comics?
But
start with $2 million. Right. So it's never going to be about the money, right?
Well, why don't we let's get – are you going to be doing conventions this year? Have you made any decisions on that?
I haven't made any concrete plans right now. I mean, I have to see if there's any conventions out there that, you know, need to fill a slot or maybe they want to send me an invite. I would consider that. But, you know, with the slate at Pet Piranha being so busy this year, I had limited time. Mm-hmm. Not sure how many I can get to. I'll probably get to a couple, but I'm not sure how many at this point. I don't have anything booked right now, but, you know, that could change. If I'm open on a weekend and they need a guest or something or want to reach out to me, I'd probably do it. Right now I just don't have anything. And that's just not for lack of wanting to. It's for lack of – I've just been nose to the grindstone on trying to get these books, you know, developed and out. And I'll tell you a secret. You know, working so hard. The Peaches and Cinnamon book that we talked about, because, you know, it's all mostly pinups, so, you know, you can bypass things, you know, the little nasty things like having to do a page layout, right? So if you do mainly pinups. So that book came together quickly and it's done, Wayne. Wow. It's done. As you and I sit here and talk on the podcast, that book is finished. And it's just a matter of, you know, putting it together, which will not take hardly any time at all. So when that thing launches, probably over the summer, I mean, you know, it'll ship very quickly because all we'll have to do is print it. So, I mean, that's how busy I've been. I'm doing these books as fast as I can. Right now we're working on The Blazes, putting Astral 4 together, which that one's nearly done, making the red label version of that, which I'm working on. So I got all these things is concurrent, you know, working on, work through the holidays, just trying not to get stressed out, but you're having so much fun, you're not thinking about it. But that's why I just haven't really given a lot of thought to conventions. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd like to get to some. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a matter of, if we can put it together, I'm happy to do that. So if anyone out there is listening, happy to be a guest anywhere. Just, shoot me an email or, whatever. Give me a call.
Well, it's good news for those of us who are fans that you're so busy, because that means we're going to have more to enjoy in the months ahead. Now, speaking of which, if people want to follow you and keep up with your doing, how do they do that on social media?
Well, I got an X account, J Magnum PETPIR, Pet Piranha. Mm-hmm. I'm also on Facebook. That's my social media. So J Magnum's on there. People can email me directly. My email address is really hard. So if you're looking for a book to fill your collection, or you want to get some back issues or something, or you just want to ask me about what's, upcoming, it's really tough. It's jmagnum@petpiranhaentertainment.com. That's really hard to remember. Right? It's my name at where I work.
And of course, the website. Hard. How's the Pet Piranha website doing?
I need to do some updating on that. But I mean, sure, there's contact on the website. You can do that. I don't really have any convention appearances at this point, so it's not really good for that. But I got to probably do a couple of blog posts. But there is a link, I think, on there to our current Kickstarter, I want to say, although it might still be the old Indiegogo, I'm not sure. I got to get that updated, so I'll work on that. That's my homework to do. And, of course, you can always get me on Kickstarter, too. I mean, my account on Kickstarter is J Magnum, so you can message me. If you have a Kickstarter account, you can message me through that. Obviously, you can search J Magnum like you did, Wayne. It'll come back with all the projects that are upcoming. But, what I find is that the websites aren't even the primary point of contact anymore. I get contacted more through Kickstarter messaging, Facebook, X, Twitter, whatever, email. So the website's actually become less important more than these other methods, which is really interesting to me, because it used to be all about the website, but now it's all about the social media platforms and the crowdfunding platforms where you get the most contact. Yeah. It's interesting.
It's funny how these things evolve over time. I remember 10 years ago, there were websites we don't even mention anymore that were the big hot areas to go to for everything. Right now, I think Blue Sky is a big – everybody's migrating from X over to Blue Sky. And
that's what it looks like. Instagram's another one.
Yeah, all those things are going on, so I get a huge kick out of that. I'm on all of them because I want to spread the word as far as I can in all the episodes and stuff like that. But some people say, why aren't you talking more on there? Well, I'm busy spreading it around on everything I can think of. So I'm kind of doing that. But if you want a great book that's a great read and fun to enjoy, be sure to get Jay's comics. And I'm sure you're going to really get a real pleasure out of reading them on many different levels. So, Jay, all I can say is, boy, I can't wait for new stuff to keep coming out in 2025. I'm looking forward to it, and I think you're going to have a great year.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate you having me on the show. It's always a pleasure speaking with you, and thank you for this opportunity to come and connect with your listeners. I always enjoy coming on the show. Thank you.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support this show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance.
Examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.